Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning. This is Fran Lewis. This is Literary Viewpoint, and Irma's about to strike tomorrow, but hopefully she'll be very gentle when she gets here, because personally we don't want her. But to all those people in Texas and Florida, we wish you the best. We're prayers are with you, and we truly hope that you didn't have too much damage and that Irma and Harvey leave and never show up, and nobody else does either. And for those of you that lost loved ones, we send our condolences and prayers. And I would like to say that the author today actually survived Harvey, and he wasn't Irma, and wasn't very nice, either one of them. Harvey was very not nice, and Irma's even worse. So I'd like to welcome Leah Harper-Bowron. Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Fran?
I'm okay. The sun's shining, and it's beautiful outside so far. So we're going to talk about a book that brings it all home as far as an educator is concerned. The time is 1968. The place is Montgomery, Alabama. And one of the people that I admired more than anything was Dr. Martin Luther King. One of my professors in college actually created the documentary King, and he let us see it before it came out. So that was really interesting.
Wow.
And Senator Barbara Kennedy had been assassinated. And Kennedy was killed on my mother's birthday, John Kennedy. War is raging in Vietnam, and on the playground of all-white Wyatt Elementary School, school bullies tease sixth grader Lisa Parker because of the way her nose looks. I can't stand when people criticize people for their appearance. Everybody is whoever they are. And Miss Loomis is a brand-new sixth-grade teacher, African-American, and what they do to her is unconscionable. So we're going to talk about the book, and its title is so perfect, Colorblind. And you often wonder why people see things or people by the way they are. So this is an important story that everyone needs to read. How would you define the title Colorblind in regard to the major plot, to the plot?
I think the title refers to the main character, 11-year-old Lisa Parker, who was blind to the color of her English teacher, the African-American teacher. And she wasn't a party to the bullying. And she loved Miss Loomis just the way she was. And she was truly colorblind.
And she must have been brought up by the same parents I was, because that's how I was taught, growing up in the South Bronx. You know, you didn't look at people for whether they were black, Spanish, Chinese, or whatever. Everybody was the same. And that's what's really wrong with the world today. It's sad. So when people think about this word, they think it refers to not being able to discern colors. Within this novel, we meet many people who cannot look away from the fact that there are people of different races. Colorblind racism is different. How does that apply to this book? And that's what got me really angry, is that there are so many people out there. I mean, we read it in the news every single day. That's what makes me really, it angers me, and it's appalling that people all over the world can't just get along, because that's why we were put here. Unfortunately, they don't get it. So how would you define colorblind racism?
I would say that in contemporary society, it is the tendency to judge people based on the color of their skin and not what's inside. And Lisa faced a special challenge in growing up because she had one parent, her father, who was a liberal civil rights lawyer, who taught her to love all people regardless of the color of their skin. And then she had her mother, who was very racist and wanted to remove Lisa from Miss Loomis's class.
And Lisa didn't want to leave. Miss Loomis was an excellent teacher. And that was the sad part of the story, is that she was one of the few teachers there that actually taught and respected the children for who they were. That's what really is sad.
Right.
So why did you decide to share this story, and how does it apply to you growing up? I read the back cover, and I read your bio, and I said, oh, my God, you're sharing this for a reason.
Yes. I, like Lisa Parker, I was born with cleft palate and cleft lip and was the mm-hmm. subject of bullying in elementary school. And I also had an African American sixth grade teacher who was teased mercilessly because of the color of her skin. I fictionalized my life experiences to make the story more dramatic.
I can imagine. Now, I grew up in the South Bronx, and everybody was mixed. And I wasn't bullied by the kids, but by one of the teachers, because my mother was a PTA president, and my aunt was a teacher in the school, and I was overweight, too, really overweight. And she would say, you can't walk up the stairs as fast as we can, blah, blah, blah. And after a while, you know, you don't want to be rude, but you have to say something and fight back in your own way. So
right.
Tell us about how difficult, yeah, I lost all the weight. That was how I fought back. Tell us about how difficult it was to have schools desegregated in Montgomery, Alabama, and how come so many people were against it, and how did the children feel being bused to these schools? I mean, my niece is bused to a school. It's not the same now, but she is bused because you're allowed to choose three schools, and if your parents get one of them, they're lucky. So how difficult was it? What was their first impression in the school about children of another race coming to an all-white school?
Well, how we started it in Montgomery, Alabama, was we brought African-American teachers into the white school first before we bused any children in. And that was to, quote, get us used to it, close quote. And judging by what happened to Miss Loomis, it didn't have a very happy ending, because the white children's
yeah.
parents were very scared about the busing. And I think that fear spilled over into the children and certainly contributed to the bullying that occurred at the elementary school.
And that's what bothered me, is that she didn't tell her parents about it, that they even made fun of her. She kept it within herself, whereas a lot of kids might have, if they were bigger kids, would have fought back or said something. What bothers me is that was David and Willis were bullies. They terrorized the other students, and as in the book that I'm just finished, Surviving High School, why weren't the parents brought in, and how come they were powerless? How come nobody did anything to stop what was happening? I mean, it's wrong, no matter whether the teacher was black, Chinese, well, it doesn't matter. Why didn't any of the adults stop what these kids were doing?
Well, in Lisa's case, Will and David were big boys, and she was a tiny girl, and she was very afraid of them, and they threatened to hurt her if she told on them.
Yeah.
So that's why she kept it a secret. And it was only when she saw how horrible the bullying was toward Mrs. Loomis that she began to gather courage and stand up to the bullies.
You know, a lot of times, I mean, I was the dean of discipline, and I was tough, and I'm little, and bullies didn't cut it with me. And they would try, but they didn't. And I used to wonder, like, you know, if you really come at a bully, they back down? A lot of them?
Yeah.
Because a lot of them were bullied before, and they back down. And, of course, I'm 5 feet tall and I'm little, and the kids I work with were, like, huge. But as the dean, they knew better. And they didn't mess with the dean, and they would never do anything to hurt me. But they, you know, they got in trouble in class, but I took care of it. But, yeah, bullies just, I don't know. They didn't. And the consequences were really dire at the time. But in this particular school, no one cared. So tell us about Lisa's mother And she told her that she should not look directly at her, which is rude, and give her direct contact. That must have made Miss Loomis feel horrible. And yet Lisa didn't tell her mother that she wasn't going to do that, right? She didn't do that.
Right. Apparently, all the fathers of the sixth grade students had a meeting before school started. And Lisa's father went to the meeting. And at the meeting, they discussed the strategy. Tell your children not to make eye contact with the teacher and not to speak to the teacher. They were thinking that if the students did this, the teacher would quit and their problem would be solved. They wouldn't have an African-American teacher at their school anymore. Well, Lisa's father stormed out of the meeting and said, this is ridiculous, I'm not about to do this, and stormed out of the meeting. And he told Lisa not to do that. But her mother subsequently told her to do it. I think the dilemma in Lisa's family, I think the influence of her father was so positive and appealing to Lisa that she listened to her father more than her mother.
Which exactly was the right thing to do. I got aggravated. And what bothered me is that in real life, you wonder, would Miss Loomis ever get up and just blast them out and say, I'm here to stay, there's nothing you could do about it. I was waiting for her to do that and say, I am the teacher of the class. You may not like what I look like. It's just too bad. I'm not leaving. But she didn't. So tell us about Miss Loomis. Oh, I wanted to hit her. Oh, God, I didn't like her. And the rude and mean statements that she made. How dare she tell anyone that Martin Luther King deserved what he got? I was like, are you serious? To create the essays, and then she stood up for herself and wouldn't do that. She did something. So why was Miss Newell? How does a teacher get up and say mean statements about somebody as wonderful as Dr. King? I mean, really?
Well, I was trying to show how terribly threatened the school, the other faculty was by the African American teacher, Miss Loomis, coming.
Yeah.
And they were, and this teacher used the same tactic as the bullies. Don't tell your parents what we're talking about today, you know, and let's keep this our little secret. But
that is the, I know they were afraid.
Another reaction to the integration was there was a lot of white flight in Montgomery where white students left the public schools and went to newly created private schools that were created solely for the purpose of stopping integration. And that happened in eighth grade, when I was in eighth grade. Children started going to private schools.
No, we didn't have that. I went to a school that was integrated, and then my junior high school was tough. It got, because the neighborhood was changing. It was different. But it never dawned on me that I should be afraid. It never bothered me at all. And when we finally moved when I was in high school, it didn't bother me. I lived in a really tough neighborhood. You couldn't walk down the street, they said, anymore. It just, I never thought about it. I just thought everybody was the same. Maybe it's better that way. So Lisa realizes that Miss Loomis is special, and she becomes her star pupil because she wants to impress her, and the teacher appreciates the fact. But the other teachers in the school make fun of Lisa and her physical problems. Why do they insult her and how come nobody did anything about it? And she doesn't say anything about it. That got me even more angry. And I'm sure that's true because teachers do that.
I created those characters, those insensitive teachers, based upon my own experience in elementary school when I would get bullied on the playground and the teachers would be sitting right there talking to one another, chit-chatting, and they wouldn't do anything. So I took it one step further and went from teachers who were ignoring the problem to teachers who were part of the problem of bullying.
And I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Because I've seen it in my own school where I taught. And I've seen teachers say things that they should not have said. And I hear, you know, you hear it, and they're yelling, going up the staircase, yelling at some poor kid that, you know, so what if you're talking without permission? There are better ways to tell him to be quiet than screaming at him and insulting him. And they do, and they still do it, and it's wrong. So what happens when the other students meet Miss Loomis? How does she deal with the bullies? That's a tough thing. And then, yeah, it's sad.
Like my real teacher, who was scared to death of the bullies, she would just sit at her desk and cry and tremble. I made Miss Loomis passive like that. If you recall, she's very nervous about coming to Wyatt Elementary and being the first African American teacher. And her reverend has to really push her into doing it.
Yeah, I know. But he didn't listen to her. He didn't listen to her when she complained. He just said, you have to be the first one, you have to do it. And I said, like, this is so sad.
Right. Well, that was an example of the conflict between keeping your eye on the prize of integration versus dealing with the very real consequences of bullying to achieve that integration.
That's the sad part. And you know what? It's still happening today. No matter what you say, anybody says, it's still happening today. So Kathy and Lisa, I like Kathy, are friends and stick together. And what happens when Lisa decides, well, you know what, if it's happening to me, I'm going to do it to Clara. But how do you know that Clara, she won't tolerate that, and she fights back, and what happens as a result? And I said, finally somebody that's got the guts to say, I'm not going to put up with this. I don't care who you are.
Right, right. And that actually happened to me. I teased a girl like Clara about her eyes, and Clara just jumped all over my business and said, stop it. And I realized then, oh my God, I'm doing exactly what the bullies are doing to me. Stop it. And I came to Clara's defense with the bullies then began picking on Clara. And that's when I stood up to the bullies for the first time.
And that shocks them because they don't expect anybody to assert themselves. And a lot of times, like I said, because I saw it in my school, you know, you stand up to a bully and they're going to back off. And being the dean of discipline, the girls were not, they form a posse, but I could handle them. The boys, some of them, were out of control when I was absent or something like that, and you had to really stand up to them, and I didn't care because I didn't mince my words, and I didn't care. The principal was afraid of them, and she's a tall African-American person, the last one that I work with, and she was afraid of them, and she would call me down to handle the problems because she literally was afraid of the parents too, and why she's still there is amazing. I don't know. So then they're told to write about one of my favorite presidents, Abraham Lincoln. So why does the Jesus tell everybody, that incensed me. I go, why would they, she say, it's a good thing he was assassinated because he wanted to free the slaves and he wanted, segregation, whatever. So what does Lisa ask to do? Because she wasn't going to write that. She decided, I'm going to do it my way. And I said, good for you.
Yeah, she asked if she can write the essay that the assassination of President Lincoln was for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes about how terrible the assassination was. And the teacher lets her, but she's frustrated with Lisa because she wants compliant students who will do exactly as she says. And she knows Lisa, because of her liberal father, doesn't believe the way she does. And I
I'm surprised that she
feels...
I guess she feels she wants it, but her mother... What would have happened if the teacher had called her mother to tell her that she went against what she said?
Her mother would have sided with the teacher and Lisa to write it the other way. Oh, yeah.
Her mother was... It's amazing because the interaction between the father and the mother, yet the father, if he said something to the mother, she kept quiet. And, sometimes it takes a while before she comes around. So she goes shopping with her mother, and her mother's very rich, and she, picks out her clothes and what she's allowed to wear. When going shopping with her mother, why does she feel out of place, and how does her mother feel unworthy? That's horrible. And her mother does not allow her to pick anything out for herself, neither did mine. She used to pick them out till the day she died. She
right.
Yeah.
This was definitely from my childhood. My mother used to be a model, and her life depended on the beauty of her face. And here she has a daughter with cleft palate and cleft lip, and she just can't accept it. She never can accept it. And she tries to buy the fancy clothes for Lisa as a way to cover up for her imperfect face. It's like, if I dress you, if you're the prettiest girl in class with your clothes, maybe the children will like you despite your face.
Yeah, it means nothing. It doesn't. My sister was very thin, and I miss her. She passed away. I'm not heavy anymore, but I was huge. And I would just say to her, Marcia, I don't mind going shopping. Just don't make me try anything on. So she would try it on. Then my mother would buy one size for her and one size for me, the same dress, and didn't quite look the same. But whatever. Not until my mother died a few years ago, and I'll never forget walking into her house. She had Alzheimer's, and she stuck her finger up, and I said, does that mean I have to go up and change? Yeah, we do. Oh, till the day she died, she quit it, but she was funny. So why has he done the? I'm serious. She called my principal one day and said I wasn't dressed properly to come to school to teach a reading group. And my reading group at that time came at 6:30 in the morning. I was in school by 6:30. And she called my boss to say she's going to be 10 minutes late because I don't like what she's wearing. True story. And my boss called me in and she said, will you help me run the school? If my mother doesn't like the way you wear it, what you're wearing, I don't. It's a good thing she told you to change. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. It was so funny. But what the father... she did a lot of things that were wild. Why is the father shunned because he takes black clients? How did that affect his business as a lawyer? Because I gave him credit for standing up for himself, too.
Yes. Well, he was viewed as the enemy for representing these black clients by his white friends. I mean, they are friends of his, but because he helps African Americans during the Civil Rights Movement, he is white clients that he would normally have stop going to him to punish him because of what he's doing with the African Americans.
That's what's scary. So you have Lisa's mother on the racist side. You have the father on the non-racist side. And that had to split the family down the middle, and I'm sure he realized what she was doing, but yet he didn't do anything. So Lisa seems closer to him than to anybody else. Why doesn't she tell him about the bullies in school? Why doesn't she ever say anything? And she's still afraid of those two? That they're gonna, if the father finds out and he comes in, they're going to beat her up?
I think it's a combination of two things. I think Lisa is deathly afraid of the bullies and their threats to hurt her. And I think that she has low self-esteem because of her mother's constant belittling her because of the way her face looks. And I think when you put those two things together, they keep her in that web of silence where she won't tell her father.
That's a horrible feeling. I'm surprised she didn't just act out and scream out, because a lot of other kids would do something else. So each teacher makes the students promise not to tell their parents what they tell them to do, and they get away with it. Lisa has her own secrets and doesn't share her fears with anyone. What happens when she decides to try and fight back?
She, when Lisa fights back with Clara, she's successful, and the bullies stop teasing Clara. When Lisa fights back against the bullies with Miss Loomis, it's too little, too late. Miss Loomis has already started to unravel emotionally from the constant bullying. And it's too, all Lisa's able to do is hold her hand and get the principal to come into the room and help Miss Loomis.
I'm surprised that they picked a woman teacher. What would have happened if it was a male black teacher? Would it have been different, maybe?
I think that would have been even worse for the white community to stomach, so to speak, because of the stereotype, like from To Kill a Mockingbird, of the black male and the white female. And that somehow the black male was going to rape or hurt the white female. I think having an African-American male teacher to be the first African-American at the school would have been doubly hard to embrace because of that stereotype.
I think this book needs to be seriously in high schools and junior high schools or even colleges to teach people, you know, to explain it to them so that kids understand. Because where I live now, the children don't do that. And the children that are going to school that are bused, you know, wherever they're bused, they're in my building and on the street, and they definitely don't do that. And yet where I grew up and where I left in the Bronx, you never knew what you were going to find. They would come into the bodegas. There were two. One where they gave, in New York City, you can't have a cell phone if you're in high school. At least you couldn't before. And the kids would bring their phone in, give a dollar, and the bodega people got a lot of money because then they would buy stuff. So that was one. And then the one next to it, the kids were totally rude. It was different. And they would, you know, like, diss on each other. And I went in one day, and they're looking at me. I just go, what you looking at, kid? I said, you're going that way, right, to that high school? They said, yeah. I said, well, I went there. I said, so I've been there, and I know the teacher's there. And then they didn't say a word after that. They didn't say a word. I said, and the phone number's on my phone. I said, so if you're going to cause trouble here, you may as well do it when you get out. They didn't bother me, not at all. And one looked at this picture of a Corvette or something. He says, I want that when I get older. I said, then go that way and earn it on your own. Don't take it. And he said to me, you know, you got a point. I said, that doesn't mean you're going to listen because I'm a stranger. So what happens when Miss Loomis tells her sponsor, I'm done, I want to go back where I came from. He tells her she doesn't have a choice, and he doesn't come to her defense. I don't know if he realized the gravity of the situation or he just wanted to prove that this could really happen and something good happens. So why did he tell her she had to stay? That made it worse.
I think he did not realize the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
And that Miss Loomis was starting to unravel emotionally. And I think he was under pressure by the civil rights activists in Montgomery to make this integration work, you know, because this is the first step. If we can get the teacher accepted in the white community, then we can bring our African-American children to the white school and bus the white children to the African-American schools, and things will, society will really become equal for the first time. And I think he was pressured from above to keep Miss Loomis in school at all costs.
Yeah, I agree with you. But unfortunately, it was at her cost. Unfortunately, it turned out to be at her cost, and that makes it even worse. Because there are a lot of principals out there that shouldn't be standing in front of a group of kids or anything. So hate and prejudice are two issues. Why does Lisa finally realize the situation, and how does she rise above it? Because she's a really great character that can be brought back when she gets older. She's really good. She's a strong character. So how does she rise above it?
I think each time she stands up to the bullies, she gets stronger and she gets more self-esteem. And by the end of the book, she is brimming with self-confidence. And I just think the effect the bullies had on Miss Loomis devastates Lisa on one level, but she becomes a person of action and doesn't hide in the secret of bullying anymore. And she begins to stand up to the bullies, loses the fear of them, and realizes the sadness of Miss Loomis's ordeal.
Well, I'm looking at this at the end of the book. I'm holding this over there because the end of the book really, I was a box of tissues, people, seriously. So Miss Loomis thinks that she's special. So why does this alienate her from the other students and her own mother? I mean, she would think that a parent is glad that she's an A student and that she's smart. But was it because she was in Miss Loomis's class? If it was any other teacher, her mother probably wouldn't have done that and said, well, it doesn't matter. So how does this make her stand away from her own mother, who's blind to the world?
I think Lisa excels academically on one level to please her father, who, you know, is an attorney, has a law degree, advanced degrees from school, very smart. Whether her mother gives her credit for her successes in school, Lisa doesn't need her mother's recognition because she has her father's recognition.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, well, I agree. Because you know what? Her mother is going to learn a hard lesson at the end. The other character that I love is Ozella. She was the maid. So how does Ozella know that Lisa adores her, yet how does her mother treat her as if she's nobody? And that's wrong, too.
Right. Lisa Ozella becomes a mother figure for Lisa. She gives
mm-hmm.
Lisa that unconditional love that her own mother doesn't give her. And so Lisa just adores Ozella and can't tolerate her mother's racism.
Well, I agree with her. I agree with her. We had a cleaning girl, cleaning lady that became part of my family, Dolores, that just passed away. And no one would even think to treat her anything other than she was part of the family. And it's
right.
It's wrong, and Lisa was right. So when we hear both parents talk, how do we know that her father is for desegregation, her mother is against it, and does the father realize that the mother is so hateful, or does he ever tell her to zip it up and realize that everybody's the same? Does he ever stand up to her?
You never see him stand up to her.
Yeah.
In the book. And I leave that ambiguous. I think
mm-hmm.
the mother kind of rules the show at home. And he rules the show at the office. And unfortunately, I mean, I think he's very aware of his wife's racism. And he doesn't agree with it, but I think he also knows he can't change her.
I know. Unfortunately, when some people just don't see the light until it's too late, when it just goes out. So when what happens when Miss Loomis leaves for 2 months and Mrs. Weaver comes back, how does this change the English class, and why does she single out Lisa again? But Lisa's not going to put up with that.
Right. Miss Weaver brings racism back to the English class and has them reading about Song of the South and Uncle Remus and those stereotypical Southern books about how wonderful slavery was and everything. And Lisa, again, doesn't want to write an essay lauding the happy times of slavery. She's not going to do it.
And I don't blame her. And she stands up for herself, and wait till everybody reads the end of the book and finds out what happens. But before I forget, because I don't want to forget, okay, France picks for this week. Seriously, I read 5 so far, but I've read yours before. It's Colorblind, Surviving High School, Proof of Life by J.A. Jantz, and she will be with me on October 4th to talk about her book, Murder Misread, Murder in the Dog Days, and we've got one more. We've got Close to Home by Robert Tigoni. On the 26th of September, Andrea Kane, A Face to Die For. On the 27th, New York Times author Tess Gerritsen, I Know a Secret. On 10/4, J.A. Jantz. On 10/10, I'm hoping to get the book really soon, Marilyn Levinson, Murder Overdue. And on 10/12, a book that's kind of different, Ula for Women, How to Become Great and Super and Live the Ula Life. And it teaches you about faith, friends, finances, and a whole lot more. It was different, I have to say that. So Lisa teams up with 2 other characters in the book, Kathy and Clara, to teach the bullies a lesson. So how do they do that? And will Dillis and David ever give it a rest? And will the school ever realize they need to do something about these 2 clowns?
Well, Lisa, Clara, and Kathy stand up to the bullies when the bullies start teasing Clara about her unusual eyes. And Lisa, when she initially stands up to the bullies, they are physical with her, and they knock her down, and she's bloody and bruised. And the girls clean her up in the bathroom, and she gets stronger just talking to them. Instead of it being a secret, it's out in the open now, and she has the scrapes to prove it. I think the boys, they like victims who are helpless and won't tell on them, so they continue to bully Miss Loomis, even though they stopped picking on Lisa and Clara.
But they don't. Unfortunately, people are relentless. And everyone goes to school with bullies, and it's sad. And a lot of schools now, not everyone has no tolerance for violence or bullies. And basically, if that happens, they're supposed to be automatically suspended. Unfortunately, not everybody follows suit. So if Lisa could talk to everybody right now, what would she say her strong point was, and how does she change from the beginning of the story until the end? What about her changes? From this meek little person to somebody else at the end of the story, how does she change in a better way?
I think when Lisa realizes what bullying can do to other people, that is Clara and Miss Loomis, she suddenly develops the courage to stand up to the bullies, and she goes from being a victim to a protagonist. And
well, she's a tough character, and I know you could probably bring her back in another book to show what happens to her when she gets older, you know, in high school or college. So then there's another contest. And the contest was to write another essay, and this time it was about Dr. Martin Luther King. And the essay was supposed to be, they're going to pick the best winner, whatever, and the final outcome, well, we're not going to talk about that. What did Lisa decide that she was going to write about Martin Luther King?
She changed the teacher's requirement and said that she was going to write about why the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King was for the worst.
Yes, she did. And I'm going to read the first paragraph because I have the book in front of me. Usually when I'm done reading a book, I give it away. I'm not giving this one away. I want some other people to read this. And she says, before she takes a deep breath and began reading, "I believe that the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King was one of the worst experiences in our nation's history. I was born with a gaping black hole in the center of my face." And she let everybody, you know, understand what she was saying. She just told the world her secret, that surprisingly, the earth didn't fall and the axis and the spin out of control. And it's continued to evolve. And then she talked about the assassination of Dr. King left a gaping black hole in the center of this country. And she continues on. If you want to know what the rest of it was, yeah. But how did the audience feel? How did her mother feel when she got up and she read that? How did her mother feel when she heard her daughter get up and read a composition, but everything that she disagreed with?
I think her mother was shocked on two levels. First of all, the racism level, that her mother would not like her daughter talking about the injustice of Dr. King's assassination. But I think also she didn't want her daughter talking about her cleft palate and cleft lip in front of everyone. That was horrible. You're supposed to keep that a secret and not tell anyone about that. And for Lisa to reveal something so personal about herself in her essay about Dr. King, I think was overwhelming to the mother.
Well, I could imagine, and I could imagine how she felt. But I would have stood up and cheered for Lisa. So if Lisa could speak to our listeners, what would she hope that all students, adults, young adults, and teens will learn from this book, from reading this book, and from her experiences? What do you hope they will come away with?
I wrote this book for the current generation so they could see what bullying was like in the 60s and not repeat those mistakes nowadays. And I think Lisa's character would say to students throughout the world that she is a testament to the evils of bullying, and that no one deserves to be treated like, to be judged based on the way you look or the color of your skin, and that you can have courage to stand up to bullies, because in the end, bullies are really cowards.
Mm-hmm. They sure are. They sure are. And, I know, name-calling is one thing. Sometimes, you know, you fight whatever, and they beat whatever, but words hurt a lot more than I know. And if you fight back with your words, if you fight back with your mouth, they can't answer you. And I know. Never forget this. I walked into a store when I was younger, and the lady said to me, "You don't belong in this store because you are overweight, and we don't have anything that'll fit you." I said, "That might be the case, but I was buying it for someone else, but now I'll think twice." And she looked at me. I said, "You know, it's funny. I could lose the weight, and I'm going to." I said, "But you can't lose the ugly that's inside of you." And I walked away. She couldn't answer me.
Wow.
And that's the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, I was taken aback, because who would ever figure that a salesperson, and it was a young person, would say that to someone else? And I said, "You know what? You can't lose the ugly inside of you." I said, "And you never will." I said, "So it doesn't matter what you look like now." And I walked back there. I'll never forget it. A year later, and I walked back there, and I walked in, and she said, "Oh my God, can we help you?" I said, "There is no help for you." I said, "It's unfortunate that you're still here." And I thought they would have, you know, they wound up firing her because she was rude to other people too. So do you think the end result will ever be that students in a school or any school will get along with each other, whether they were white or black? Do you think it would ever change in Lisa's school or any of the schools back then? Or will they always be like that, hateful?
I think it gets better the longer that the African American children get used to the white children, and the white children get used to the African American children. I think the racial discrimination gets better, and it's not as prominent. I think the discrimination based on how you look is always going to be there.
Yeah.
And I think the racial discrimination is always going to be there too, but I think we've made some strides since the 60s. I think it was much worse in the 60s.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. And growing up in the South Bronx where I did, and then moving, no matter where you go, you're gonna find it. And what bothers me is that if you listen to the news, you hear it. That's what bothers me. With all the different countries around the world and everybody not getting along, how they expect kids to get along if everyone in the world and the major powers can't get along. And everybody is insulting everybody, and the people on the top have to learn to control their mouths because they're supposed to set the tone and the example for everybody, and they're not. And that's what really worries me. So why did they just send one black teacher? Why not more than one teacher? And the other teachers never, ever came up to her and apologized for being horrible. Why not send like two or three so that they would have a group? Was this like a test just to see if Miss Loomis could or anybody could survive?
I think it was a test. I think, for instance, when I moved to from sixth grade to seventh grade, I had three African American teachers in my seventh grade classes, and so they still weren't busing students yet, but they were increasing the number of African-American teachers at the school so that there wouldn't be that that isolated discrimination.
I had a fourth grade teacher, I'll never forget her, Jackie Jackson, that was African-American, and everybody loved her. And the principal of the school would never have tolerated that, that's for sure. There would have been no discussion. And when I walked into her class, she was, she was the only black African-American teacher in the school. And I don't really remember how the teachers reacted to her. I don't think there was a problem. But the students loved her. We loved her. And there was only one, I found a very odd, one male teacher in the whole school. And he wasn't a regular ed teacher. He taught the children with learning disabilities back then. And nobody liked him.
Right.
And he was white. He was white. But nobody liked him. He was really mean. And when he said something about me to the fourth grade teacher, that wasn't true. She blasted him. And, you're allowed to play outside, and then when they blow the whistle, you have to get on line. Well, one of the girls, I'll never forget her name, Margaret Johnson, pulled me out of line so that I would get in trouble with her. But she wasn't going to have any of it. So she was an amazing person. And to this day, she was both, I loved her. And she appreciated everything, that everybody did, and the kids loved her. So maybe we were lucky back then. And it was when they first started to integrate our school, and it was in the South Bronx. So what message would you hope everyone will remember after they read this book? And I really feel that this book belongs in the public library. It belongs in school libraries. It belongs in guidance counselors' offices. It belongs in everybody's home. This is a fantastic book. Seriously.
Thank you.
So what message would you...
Thank you.
And I'm seriously, because basically, to tell you the truth, Leah, I don't ask basically anybody to be on my show. Everybody asks me. I get inundated from Providence Books, which deals with every kind of genre, because they're doing, I have to announce, my blog tour, October 1st to December 1st, and the title of my book is called A Daughter's Promise, and it's my promise to my mom never to put her in a nursing home. She had Alzheimer's, and it's told from my voice and hers, and everybody that's read it said it defied five boxes of tissues, but it was sad, but informative, and I did a good job. So I think she'll be proud of me up there, wherever she is. I know.
Yeah.
It was a tough ride, but what would you, I really think this book belongs out every single place. So what message would you hope that people get after reading your book, especially adults, not just kids, adults too?
That bullying on the basis of physical appearance or the color of one's skin is inherently wrong, and it undermines the self-esteem of the person being bullied.
I agree, and I think that some of these people that are bullying have bad self-esteem too, and they're just doing it to make themselves look better or bigger. That's something that I learned. Even as a dean of discipline, the really tough kids, and I go, you're not so tough if your father walks in, and you're not going to be even tougher if your mother walks in. And, oh, yeah, I have three phones, one for your mother's office, one for your father, and one in case my phone dies, which it never did. I mean, and they looked at me and go, how would you feel if they said it to you? And they usually apologized or backed off. So what is next for you, and where can everybody find this fantastic 5-star book? I'm going to post the review. I didn't realize it came out. I'm going to post it after. And I sent your original publicist a copy, but I'll send it to the new one, to Leslie, in a few minutes. The show will
Great.
Go public at 12 o'clock. I don't have a chat room, for the reason is that only once in the 10 years that I've been doing this, did I have a bunch of people that were really ridiculous. We were talking about the African Gold Coast, the Gold Coast, Ivory Coast, and African tusks and the elephant tusks, and they didn't like the topic because obviously they believed you can kill elephants for their ivory, and I did not put up with that. So my answer to them when they were putting things in the chat room was, if you don't like what you hear and you don't like my show, why don't you just get lost and disconnect? And they did, because I'm not going to put up with that. And
no.
I gave it right back. Nobody bullies this little girl. So what is next for you, and where can everybody get this fantastic book?
This book is available at, it can be ordered from any bookstore, in Barnes & Noble, and
nice.
Other independent bookstores. If you don't see it there, you can just ask them to order my book. I've won 3 literary prizes for this book.
Oh, nice. Well deserved.
Yes. The Living Now Awards gave it the silver medal for inspirational fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the Independent Booksellers Awards gave it, it was the finalist in the categories of Best New Fiction and Social Change.
Oh, nice.
And the next thing on my plate is to finish a book I'm writing about a code that runs through the writings of James Joyce. So I'm working on a big nonfiction book. But I do feel that I have more Lisa books inside me, and so I'll be working on another Lisa book soon.
Oh, now I'm not disappointed because I can't wait to get it first, so I could write something wonderful about it. Now I know there's a lot that Lisa could do to help other people. And she could become her own form of activist to help people understand that what prejudice is wrong, you know, bullying is wrong. And I could see her and Clara and forming a group, and Cindy forming a group, that they could do something together. But I can't wait to see what happens when Lisa grows up and when she becomes gorgeous
and
beautiful.
Another thing I'm starting is a group called Teens for Tolerance. To spread the idea of tolerance among the current generation. And I think we have a hashtag for it right now on my Facebook page. But I really think to have teenagers joining a group called Teens for Tolerance would be wonderful.
I'm going to look up your Facebook page right now so I could put the information on my Facebook page that everybody reads. Seriously. Whenever I do
Thank
something,
you.
Everybody, there it is. I got it. I found it. Let me put my glasses on. Okay. Now, I don't see a friend thing, though. There's no friend thing, though. It says Leah Harper Bullrun, and it doesn't say... invite your friends to like this page, but there's no friend. Okay. So I'm going to see if I could find that. It's directly on your Facebook page?
I think so.
It says, shop now, see the latest products from Lisa Liam Park. And it says your book. And research shows, oh, here it is. I got it. Okay. Teens for Tolerance, and I'm going to share this on my Facebook wall right now. And it's done. I did. I just shared this. It says, research shows that parents and caregivers who spend at least 15 minutes a day talking with their child can build a foundation for a strong relationship and prevent bullying, says SAMH, Teens for Tolerance. And I'm looking to see if there's a lot, remembering our fallen heroes today, Teens for Tolerance. I lost a student that day. And there was something on my Facebook wall to Janine. And there's a your link is there. Okay. So I put that on my Facebook wall. And is there a special link just for that? for that particular thing? For teens for tolerance?
I'm not sure.
No, there isn't. It's just, it says hashtag teens for tolerance, but now it's on my Facebook wall so that everybody's going to read it.
Great.
So I want to thank you so very much for today. And when you write that next Lisa book, please make sure that whoever's taking care of you and your publicist sends it to me, because I definitely want to read it, without a doubt.
Okay. All right, Fran.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Bye-bye.